and welcome to episode 60 of The Tech Reformation, where the world of technology meets the worldview of Christianity. I'm Craig.
And this is Tank.
And we are two men down this week. We're really sorry that it's been a bit of a up and down track lately with hosts. Hopefully next week we'll all be back on, and we are looking forward to doing... There's a bit of follow-up that we've been waiting for a long time to do when all four of us are on, so... looking forward to that. Anyway, how have you been, Tank?
I've been good.
How's Japan treating you?
It's great here. Right now I'm recording true Japanese style. I'm sitting on the floor. My wife kicked me out of the living room where our only desk-like object is. And so I'm now on the floor.
Is sitting on the floor...
Using a chair as a desk.
Is sitting on the floor kind of a historical cultural thing, or is it still just the done, like, they don't have furniture, it's just the done thing to sit on the floor these days?
They have quite a bit more furniture now. I've been in like one Japanese house where they like had more of a traditional room where it was still sitting on the floor, and 2 days ago I ate sitting on the floor for the first time. But it's really interesting. I guess there's this concept between, what is it called? You're like a platform culture or something. So you eat on a platform, sleep on a platform, work on a platform, like bed, table.
Yep.
And you almost develop this fear of the floor, like, oh, the floor is dirty. but if you're not a platform person, then the floor is safe. And so like Japanese take their shoes off before they come into the house. And so really your house, I mean, you need to sweep them up and stuff, but the floors don't get nearly as dirty as they might if you do everything on a platform. So it's like, I don't think anybody would really eat off the floor, but it would probably be cleaner if they did. But the desk or the table is just tall enough for you to slip your legs under whenever you're eating.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really interesting when I heard that.
Cool.
Yeah.
And how's the mission field?
It's
still there.
Well. Yeah, still there. I'm not all safe yet. give it another week or two and I might head home, but
I like your confidence, sir.
There's actually a pretty cool story where I ate at that restaurant.
On the floor?
Yeah. I got to talk to a guy. It was funny. He was at the church I go to, and he was just saying, like, what do you do? And I told him some stuff. And one thing, the homeless ministry stuff, I said, he's like, can I be a part of that? And I said, maybe I'd have to ask, but are you passionate about homeless ministry or just ministry in general? It's like, well, I learned about Christianity, really started like going, like looking more into it about a year ago. And I'm not sure I'm a Christian yet, but I wanted to do more Christian type stuff. I was like, well, how about we get dinner and talk about that? And so we got dinner and I like went through the gospel and really just the whole story of the Bible. And then he was like, can you tell me more about the Holy Spirit, what it means to be indwelt by the Holy Spirit? So I talked about that. And he's like, well, how do I get the Holy Spirit? So I talked about salvation. And he's like, well, that it's through salvation. He's like, well, how do I be saved? I was like, well,
cool.
Here's this. So, that was really cool. He said that, like, you go home and pray about it and talk to the church Sunday.
Awesome.
Told them about baptism and stuff. So, yeah, that was... really cool opportunity. That was, he had been like a mission. He grew up next to a missionary. He went to Seattle and had a home. His host parents were Christians, brought him to church. Then he moved to San Diego and his roommate was a Christian who brought him to church. And so he's just been followed around by Christians. So he was already on the edge and I just had to kind of explain the final piece. And
yeah, that is ready. Very cool.
Mm-hmm. So it was very exciting.
That's great. Do you think you could start a missions conversation, like an outreach conversation, by saying, hey, you know how Japanese people sit on the floor? I know another group of people who sat on the floor the night before one of them died. And then No?
That would work. That'd probably work. It's often easy just to say, hey, have you ever been to a church? No. Do you know what Christians believe? No. Are you interested? Yeah. Cool. That works too.
That sounds much smoother and less weird.
I might try the floral one, though. Never know.
Awesome. Also, just one point of follow-up before we move on to the news. A few weeks back, I was in an episode. I think it was just Derek and I that week, maybe. And I recorded an app called Awesome Baby Tracker, which my wife and I have been using to track our son's eating and sleeping habits and things so that we can give accurate information to medical professionals when we take him in for his regular checkups. And it's been brought to my attention by one of our lovely listeners, a lady from the US, I believe, that I probably made a bit of an accidental word leap in that conversation from females or women to mothers. If that came across wrongly, incorrectly, I'm sorry about that. Was not intentional in any way to be offensive. It was just a matter of fact that my wife has found it really useful. But certainly parenting roles can be quite shared, and so men may also find that app useful as well. So just wanted to clarify that the app is for anyone. That's just how, yeah, you know, my wife's had it on her phone. She's found it really useful. But I've also used it from time to time too. And also we are grateful for our female listeners. So I think I made it sound like I thought that maybe our male listeners should pass the information on to their wives or something like that. But certainly we're always keen to hear from more female members of the community. So feel free to jump in our Slack or whatever and introduce yourself, and be good to just get some more representation from both sides in the Slack discussions that we have and those kinds of things, and just to really see how Tech Reformation is helping you, or any thoughts that you might have. We'd love to hear from you. Alright, well, we should get into the news. Are you ready for that?
Ready.
Alright, let's do it. And that brings us into Tech You Should Know, where we bring you a few tech news stories from the past week that we want to talk about. Interested in those sweet glasses that your favorite Instagram wears but don't know where to get them yourself? Instagram is working to fix that problem with a series of new features enabling products to be tagged so that you can see what they are and how much they are, and then redirecting you to the place where you can buy it if you decide you simply must have that product. Right now, this is simply an experiment. No money is changing hands between Instagram and its partners. But you can bet that if this gets big, this could turn into serious ad revenue for Instagram. Do you use Instagram, Tank?
I've never used Instagram.
Okay, so this will be a fairly short conversation, probably. I would say there's already, from what I've seen, a fair bit of advertising on Instagram. I can't recall whether it's actually in ad form or in just a lot of companies use it to put out images of their products. If that makes sense. No, it is in ad form. Mm-hmm. So you'll scroll down your feed and there'll be places that I don't like on Instagram are still advertising to me through their feed. So I guess this might just increase it and change the revenue structure a bit. I don't know.
Mm.
Anyway.
I feel like the Instagrammers should get refers money. You know, like if they click through your Instagram, you should get money. Well, that might destroy Instagram with everyone. Like, look at this water bottle. You should buy it.
I guess maybe they would do something like that. I don't know. That's an interesting thing. I know some things like that. Like, I've heard of some celebrity accounts and stuff where the celebrity gets paid like a commission to wear certain clothes or certain jewelry items or something in a YouTube video or an Instagram photo shoot that they do. And then they tag the products underneath in the show notes or whatever. In the show notes. I've been doing too much podcasting. In the description. And then people can click through to the brand of whatever they were wearing and make a purchase that way.
Gotcha.
So I guess that's already happening. This might just be a slightly different take on that. So we'll wait and see what happens there. In other news, more users around the world are accessing the internet from mobile devices than from desktop computers for the first time, according to internet monitoring firm StatCounter. Really? For the first time? The combined traffic from mobile and tablet devices tipped the balance at 51.2% versus 48.7% for desktop access, marking the first time this has happened since StatCounter began tracking stats for internet usage. It's a huge moment for the web overall. This means going forward, companies that haven't yet decided to focus on a mobile-first approach to their internet services and web properties really should, as the trend line is unlikely to reverse. I must admit, that's surprising to me that I would have thought that we would have already hit that point, but interesting to know that it's official now.
Yeah, I guess like maybe office jobs, maybe video games. But yeah, it is hard for me to imagine as well. Maybe like major downloads would mainly be on a desktop. I don't know. I don't know how that happens.
Yeah, probably. You're probably right. I don't know. I think the mobile first thing is an important thing from a web designer's / developer's perspective. Like, you know, obviously, any of those sites who are still holding out their desktop only design or functionality is probably going to... They're probably going to have to either change or get swallowed up by mobile users who just don't care about them anymore because they don't care about the customers enough to build a proper mobile website. Anyway, we'll see what happens there. And next up, Microsoft has unveiled Teams, its Slack-like chat service. Teams offers the same kind of web-based IRC-like text chat experience that Slack users have come to know and love, with persistent storage of historic chats, integrations with third-party services, and of course, emojis and memes. Microsoft's vision is a little different, however. Teams has threaded chat so that replies can be directly beneath the message they're responding to. Microsoft is also heavily promoting its integrations with the rest of Office 365. Team members can be invited to Skype for business calls, shared documents can be attached to conversations, and services like Power BI can be directly accessed from within Teams. Third-party integrations also possible, with a range of APIs available. Tank, as our resident Microsoft person, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I don't know. I can see it being really good for Microsoft shops who use all of that stuff in depth. I know Slack, people have been requesting threaded replies, I think, for a long time in Slack. And still haven't got it. But I did also hear that it's not, there's no free tier. So Tech Reformation will never move to Teams.
Yay! That's what I like to hear. Stick it to the Microsoft man. What is Power BI, by the way?
Power BI is a data visualization tool.
Right, okay. Very good.
You want me to go more in-depth than that?
No, that makes sense. And finally, last week, Twitter announced that it was shutting down the short video sharing service, Vine, amid its growing struggle to monetize. Now, the original creators of Vine have announced their next initiative, a live streaming video service called Hype. It's no secret that the app industry has recently been flooded with live streaming apps, but Hype creators Colin Kroll and Russ Yusupov believe that Hype has more than enough features to set it apart from the likes of Periscope. Essentially, Hype takes the simplicity of Periscope and adds a more feature-rich experience. It offers the ability to incorporate other media into your live streams. For instance, you can share photos, videos, and GIFs from your camera roll directly to the live stream. Additionally, you can play music from your iTunes library and add text, emoji, and themed backgrounds to the live stream. There's also support for more engagement between hosts and viewers. You can try it yourself now by downloading on the App Store if you have an iOS device. And the Android app is coming soon.
Can you see yourself using it?
I've never live streamed anything, to be honest. This does sound cool. I guess it depends how that process of adding things like music to the live stream works. Like, can you fade music in? Or does it just start playing all of a sudden? Like, is it kind of a... Does it have a mixing platform associated with it? Or is it just kind of really basic? I'd need to find out that. Otherwise, I'd probably just use Periscope or something similar, something that's already been out there for a while and had all the bugs ironed out.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
If we left out something you think we should have mentioned, email us at techreformation@gmail.com. For more Tech Christian notes throughout the week, follow us on Twitter at techreformation. And that brings us into Tech You Should Use, the part of the show where we talk about one particular technology and the reasons why we think it might be useful for you to use. And this week, I'm going to talk about something that I think I might have mentioned in passing in an earlier episode, probably a long time ago now. But it's something my wife and I use pretty much every day. It's called a screencast, so not a Chromecast and not an Apple TV. It's made by Belkin, and essentially a few years ago we were renovating our sort of main living area in our house, and I wanted to have a way where we could have all of our devices. So we've got a DVR, a set-top box essentially that you can add a hard drive to, and an Apple TV, a Blu-ray player, and a Nintendo Wii. We wanted to be able to have all four of them plugged in, ready to go at any time. But we didn't want to have them all in a cabinet. We sort of wanted our living area not to have extra furniture just to hold up a TV. So we put our TV on the wall on a bracket and put a single shelf running along underneath it that holds some DVDs and Blu-rays. And then everything else in terms of DVR, the actual box and the Apple TV and everything, we wanted to have hidden. So how we did that was we shifted it all to a cupboard in the main hallway of our house, which has a sliding door so we can close the door on it, plugged it all in there. And then the screencast basically works. There's a unit immediately under the TV mounted to the wall, and there's a unit in the where all the devices are. And allows you to do four HDMI in, so four HDMI sources in, and then the one underneath the TV just has a single HDMI out, which goes into the back of the TV. And it has a little remote so that when you turn on the TV and you go, oh, I want to watch, at the moment it's set to TV, I want to watch something on Apple TV, you just press a couple of buttons and change the source, and then bang, you're into Apple TV, and same for Blu-ray player and whatever. So really quick and easy way to switch between different sources while keeping all your cables and things hidden from view. So if you're into wireless things and want things to be really neat and tidy, might be worth checking that out. Have you ever seen something like that or heard something like that, Tank?
I've never heard or seen.
Okay.
That. Yeah. But it does sound very useful.
It is very useful. The other thing we used it for, we used to run the Young Adults Ministry at our old church, and we, over summer one year, we decided we were going to set up an outdoor cinema. So we bought, we've got like a patio area, it's about 20 metres long by 4 metres wide, that's undercover. We bought a cheap 100-inch retractable screen on eBay, and a cheap projector that only works at night time, not during the day, but it's pretty good for what it is. And our second Blu-ray player now lives in our garage, as Ben would say it. And we've got a second screencast that goes from there to the projector in the outside, so we can have the Blu-ray stuff all in, hidden out away from the weather and whatever. And then, just stream it basically over over the radio waves to the projector. So
that's cool.
Yeah, it's really helpful. Probably not for everyone. If you've already got a TV cabinet that does everything you need, awesome. That's fine. But if you need some solution for getting HDMI from one place to another without running a long cable or something, then check that out and see if it works for you. Belkin Screencast. That's the tech you should use this week.
Hey y'all, this is Tank. Today we are sponsored by Missionalware at missionalware.com. It's the perfect place for giving a belated Reformation Day gift. Have a friend who loves coffee and Calvin? Get him a coffee mug with Calvin's face on it. Or perhaps you want to help a friend who thinks sola fide rhymes with bona fide. send a Five Solas poster his way. And remember, when you're finalizing your purchase, be sure to let Missionalware know that Tech Reformation sent you.
Hey Dan, what do Scarlett Johansson, Jack London, and Richard Dawkins all have in common?
Probably that they're all more famous than I am.
Well, besides that, they actually all share the same worldview.
And here at the Art of Redemption podcast, we do too. During the show, your hosts Daniel, Cody, and Roy take on entertainment and the arts from a Reformed Christian worldview.
The media that surrounds us is always making a thousand different arguments on how we should answer the most basic questions of our existence. Like, where do we come from? Why is the world so messed up? And is there anything we can do to fix it? Are you prepared to understand those arguments?
Let us help you do exactly that. We take apart movies, music, paintings, and more, and then we examine the worldviews within. Next, we face them up against God's revealed truth and see how they hold up. And it usually isn't very pretty.
Join our conversation on iTunes or your favorite podcast catcher under The Art of Redemption as we look at the media around us and ask not only what it means, but why.
That brings us into Theology from the Headlines. So this week, we're going to talk about an article titled, When New Tech is Just Too Embarrassing to Use. So in this article, the main part are these two videos, although there's a full article that covers the videos, and they're not needed to watch, but they're two short ones. First is the Google Pixel ad, where the guy, there's four friends on a train, and the first one says, "Okay, Google," and he asks something. And then by the end of it, they're using the Google VR and looking around on the train. And the author of the article makes the point, like, how awkward is it to, everywhere you go, to be saying, "Okay, Google," out loud or around your friends? And then how comfortable would you really be in a VR headset out in public? And then someone actually takes on that question in the next video by wearing a VR headset in public places. And it's pretty entertaining. She's like on the subway looking around, and everyone's looking at her like she's crazy. And she makes the point that she feels really vulnerable because you're immersed in this world trying to play a game, but you realize like there are many people actually really around me, and they could just steal my bag and walk off, and I would never know because I'm already have this perfect distraction. And so it just goes on to talk about how in any new technology, oftentimes there is there's some awkwardness, some embarrassment being an early adopter. And it makes a point of like using a Bluetooth headset and you're walking down the street talking to yourself, and everybody looks at you and thinks that you're talking to them. But no, it's just normal. Everyone assumes if you're walking down the street talking, you're on the phone. And so there's this kind of curve of you're an early adopter and it's really awkward. And then it becomes normal where pretty much everybody's using it and everyone knows exactly what you're doing. So what about you, Craig? Have you ever thought about VR or saying, "Hey Siri," or whatever you say for Siri, or being awkward in public?
I think it is "Hey Siri." I don't really use Siri in public. I think they said 51% of people tend to use these kind of assistants in their car, and that's the main place I use it. So when I'm driving, sometimes I'll tap the button, or there's actually a hands-free thing in my car that is like a Bluetooth microphone, but you tap a button on that and it wakes up your phone and turns on Siri. And then I'll just say "call" and then my wife's name, and it dials her number and puts her through the car's sound system. So that's pretty much all I use it for. Like, I don't use it just to search the web for me and stuff. Like, I can type, so I'm okay to do that. I don't need to just say it to the phone and have it do that. And I've never been one of those people with a Bluetooth headset who walks around talking as if to themselves. I do still find that a bit weird sometimes. and it's kind of, I don't know why it's weird. Like, it's socially acceptable to have a phone, up to your face, and people are like, okay, they're on the phone, they're not talking to me, they're talking to someone else. But it is awkward, not just for you as the person doing it, but somewhat awkward for the people around you to hear your conversation and not see that you're having that conversation with anyone else. It's almost like a privacy thing. Like, if you can overhear someone's phone conversation, but they're on the phone, at least they're trying to sort of, at least they're visually showing you that they're doing, having a private conversation. When they're just talking out into the air at normal volume and standing right next to you, there's no, like, social convention for, hey, I'm on the phone, you know, tune me out. It's just like, I'm just going to talk and stand next to you, and you're going to hear everything I say, and you're just going to pretend that I'm not crazy and that this conversation is okay for public hearing.
How many sentences have you made it through a phone conversation? And I didn't say that well, but you not being on the phone talking to a guy on a Bluetooth headset who's not actually talking to you.
What? Me not being on the phone talking to a guy who's not talking to me on a Bluetooth headset. Okay, yeah, yes, I think I see what you mean. How many, like, how much have I started a conversation then realized they're on the phone?
Yeah,
not very often.
Someone said, like, hey, how's it going? And you respond, and they respond back, and then you respond.
Yeah.
And then he say, so did you pick up the potatoes? Oh, never mind.
Did you pick up the potatoes? I don't tend to talk to random strangers about their potatoes.
Yeah.
So, no, I haven't had that.
Okay. Well, that's fair. I hope what you mentioned, the statistic of 51% use Siri in their car. Hopefully that's not the same statistic for using virtual reality yet.
Yeah. At least not until self-driving cars become
a
thing.
True. Then you can use virtual reality to imagine you're driving through a jungle or something.
You could play driving games on the way to work while you get driven to work.
But yeah, that is a good point with virtual reality. I've never thought of, like they have the ones that your phone hooks into. And they try to make them, like the Samsung's VR is wireless. But if you really think about it, like, you can bring it around with you, but really, where are you going to play it anywhere in public? But has there been any other technology that you've been an early adopter of and perhaps been embarrassed by using it?
Not really. I mean, I consider myself a fairly early adopter of the iPhone. Which, I mean, everyone was. It had a quick take-up, so I'm not claiming to be some special iPhone user. But that was never an embarrassing thing. If anything, it was like, hey, I've got an iPhone. This is awesome. I was embarrassed when I didn't know how to use certain things on the iPhone. Like, I remember getting home the first day and thinking, you know, is it always on the internet? Like, do I need to somehow turn the internet off on it so that it's not costing me extra data and whatever? One of the guys from work was like, nah, if that little wheel at the top isn't spinning, then it's not downloading anything. I was like, okay, cool. Yep. So that was a little bit embarrassing because I just didn't know. Like, I'd come from prepaid to a plan, and I was thinking I was going to get charged for anything and everything just for breathing. but yeah, no, I don't think I've had technology that I'm kind of actually embarrassed by. Maybe it's the personality type I am, though. Like, I think some people, like with the Bluetooth headsets and things, some people, it's probably going to be the exact same thing with VR. Some people are just okay with doing what they're doing and not caring about what anyone else around them thinks. And I wouldn't say I'm super worried about other people's opinions of me, but I don't go out of my way in public to make a scene at which I'm in the center. or to do something that's going to draw unnecessary attention to myself. Whereas I think both of those things can. So yeah, that was a pretty convoluted answer. So no, I don't recall a time where I've really been embarrassed by the technology that I'm using.
So you weren't one of the Google Glass people?
No, I thought Google Glass... Google Glasses? Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, like the actual wearable glass. I thought that was a cool project, and I was... I was interested in it, but I did sort of think, how's this going to work practically if everyone's going around doing that? And if everyone's walking around taking photos of each other and, you know, all the stuff they did on that video, standing on top of a building and watching the sunset and sending a video to their girlfriend while playing ukulele.
I don't remember the ukulele.
I was just thinking, like, what was that?
I said, I don't remember the ukulele.
Yeah, he was playing ukulele, I'm pretty sure.
Nice.
Anyway, yeah, so I remember thinking how much practical use would I actually have for that technology, but the idea seemed cool. Mm-hmm. So I probably would have, like, if they'd gone ahead with it, and it wasn't super expensive, I would have got one just to try it out, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows, maybe that would have been really weird and embarrassing. I don't know. I'm sort of an early adopter with things if I can see that I'm really going to need to use them or that they'll mm-hmm. be very useful to me. So, like, Apple Watch, I didn't get on board with Apple Watch the same way that I did with iPhone because I just don't have a need for it.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, wearable tech, the whole thing of wearable tech to me is still a little bit... I'm keeping that a bit at arm's reach, I guess, but...
Mm-hmm. Arm's reach. So yeah, you can wear an Apple Watch. It's on your arm.
Very punny.
Yeah. Yeah, I've never gotten into the Apple Watch, or, of course, I don't have an iPhone, but any of the other ones either. Although I do think that is a much smarter middle move before moving to glasses. A watch was probably a better choice for the customer base.
Yeah.
Yeah, for myself, I think, like, the only thing I could really think of being an early adopter was similar to you. And this, I got a Wii. Well, I was one of the first people to get, not the first people, but I got a Wii, like, right whenever it came out. But that's what everyone was doing, so I can't really pride myself in being an early adopter. And I currently don't pride myself in having had a Wii.
Yeah.
That was one of my least favorite consoles. That kind of disillusioned me from Nintendo, but that's a side story. And then being embarrassed by technology, I think at least for a while, there's been different points in my life for sure. You know, I can think of, it's always video game related, but like carrying around a DS or probably more Game Boy Advance in high school would embarrass me. Doesn't mean I didn't do it sometimes.
You still did it, so not been that bad.
Yeah, but it was like at that point, you know, people are trying to be cool and I would not want people to see me playing my Game Boy. It's kind of nice in Japan. That's what a lot of people do on the subway, so that's kind of a thing of the past. I think playing Pokemon Go has also embarrassed me at times. I tried to hide the fact that I was using my phone for Pokemon Go when walking around a park.
Yeah.
When there's like four other people in Ash Ketchum costumes running around.
Nice.
But yeah, I think those are the only two I can think of. So I thought this was just an interesting connection, though, to just our Christian walk. Not so much like, it's hard to say we're early adopters as Christians, but it's also, I think a lot of the time whenever we, what we do as Christians can kind of almost feel the same way, like early adopters, they're in the minority, and they're doing something that the rest of the culture, isn't used to yet. And so I think a lot of these things that we see whenever we use technology, early adopting technology, and we feel awkward and we feel like, oh, this is a weird thing to do in public and people are looking at me. I think oftentimes that we feel that same way about our Christian walk if we try to do certain things in public. Can you see the connection there?
Yeah, I think so. So, like, having a prayer meeting in public, is that what you mean?
Yeah, that would be something.
Yep. Yeah, that's probably fair. I don't know. I was thinking about this week because I went to a conference last weekend interstate with James White and Jeff Durbin, and it was really good. And I got to meet both of them and have a quick chat and hear from them with great teaching and stuff as well, which was awesome. But there was, I think, a whole group of people at the conference who were like open air street preachers, there was, at least I know of some people who were sort of quite into that who were there. And I guess I'm not embarrassed by the idea of street preaching, but I'm always nervous that I would want it to be done right. Like, I've seen street preaching done really, really badly, and it reflects really poorly on the church as a whole. And I think it's the same with any of those sort of things that we do as Christians and that we just see as normal. So preaching, prayer, discipleship type conversations, you know, conversations that go beyond how's the weather and how's work and how's family to actually how's your relationship with God and those kinds of things going. If you do those things out in public, there is kind of a, at least for me, there's an awareness of, okay, we're not, you know, we're not in Kansas anymore. We're not in the church building anymore, or we're not in someone's home anymore. People can hear us. You know, they might, what do they think about what we're doing? That doesn't mean it should stop us from having those conversations or doing those things, outside of the church and someone's house. It's probably actually good for us to have that, discomfort to push through sometimes. But yeah, it's just something that kind of, that brought that to mind, was just that thinking of some of the times when I've heard street preachers and kind of cringed and gone, like, you know, it's not that I'm against preaching, but if we're going to be doing these really overtly Christian, tasks or Christian actions in public, we don't need to be dumbing them down and making them perfectly acceptable to the world, because that would be compromising on the message, but we need to be, presenting Christ accurately and in a way that glorifies him, so that we, I guess, yeah, don't bring detriment, like don't bring something detrimental to his name or to what, to the cause of, the gospel, I guess. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. I think we, like doing Tech Reformation, we faced that a little bit, just with the idea of, we're doing something in public and, or like being a Christian blogger or some, or any of that. And you write the wrong thing or say the wrong thing and it gets passed around the internet. And, you know, there is definitely anything that's done public, like that. Yeah, definitely has some accountability to honoring our master well, with the things we say. But yeah, I think even you mentioned just like being in a coffee shop and talking about, talking to each other about the deeper things of life. And I think even it can be uncomfortable just thinking like, oh, the people around me can hear me, but especially depending on the person, if you're not talking with your close church friend, if it's just like a coworker that you're hanging out with or a friend, you know, that used to go to church or like, you never have talked about spiritual things, and then you move to that conversation. I think that's also, it has that almost that early adopter feel. It's a weird phrase to say, but like that feel of like, oh, you're going to this conversation? we've never done that before.
Yeah. It's almost like, what do they say? Like, you can talk about anything except for religion and politics. For a lot of people, those are kind of off limits. So I've had plenty of conversations about faith and the Christian walk and the Christian worldview. Had quite an extended, let's say, vibrant conversation with a friend of mine probably 18 months ago who, he was actually a groomsman at my wedding, used to go to the same church as me. He was a few years younger than me, but he kind of hung around with me and my friends. And he since then has moved overseas and, sort of just basically walked away from church completely. And so I was just, talking to him about where he's at, and we got onto the topic of worldview and implications of his worldview compared to the Christian worldview and all that kind of thing. But it was someone I knew, you know, I hadn't seen him for a few years, so there'd been a gap there, and it was, when we first caught up, it was kind of like, oh, is this, you know, going to be the same as it was before, or I knew things had changed for him in terms of what he believed, and so I knew that would be different, but other than that, I kind of thought it'd be quite similar. And that was in a pretty busy coffee shop, and we were kind of in one of those tables in the doorway, so there was constantly people walking past, almost half bumping into us as they tried to get their coffee out the door to the outdoor seating and whatever. I don't find that sort of thing super awkward, but that was with someone, like I said, that I'd already, you know, we'd done church together before. I think you're right, when it's someone who is either new to the topic of conversation, full stop, or is someone that you don't know in that context at all, and you go there with them, that can often be... It does certainly have an early adopter type feel. You are treading new ground in an area that essentially is probing the deepest issues of the heart and what they believe and their core beliefs. Do you know what I mean? Like, as soon as we go to the gospel, as soon as we go to what we believe as Christians, and we challenge people, you know, we talk about worldview and sort of, yeah, just walk through that discussion with people, whatever form that takes, whether that's them starting it or us starting it, there can be certainly a feeling, I think, of unease or just, I don't know, nervousness about how the conversation will go. I know I used to feel that as well with Jehovah's Witnesses and people who would come to my door. Like, I've always been of the mind that if God brings the fish to my door, I'm not going to throw them back in the ocean. Like, I'm not going to turn them away. So I'll always talk to them and engage them. But pretty early on, I still don't always remember to do this, but I try to remind myself to pray as I'm speaking, while I'm speaking to them, to pray that God will guide my words and that the Holy Spirit will give me the right things to say at the right time, and that kind of thing. Not so that I can have some kind of magic pill conversation that will save them on the spot necessarily, but just so that, like I said before, that He's glorified in the conversation, no matter what turns it happens to take.
Nice. So what would that be like? I know, for me and many people, like, it's those conversations and just doing anything, whether praying in public or just a lot of those things that would pull social stigma, whether from one person that you're in the conversation with or 100 people that walk by, whatever the case. What would you say is a good way to push past that, the fear of awkwardness? So like, whenever you want to ask this question that you know is going to lead to uncomfortable conversation, or you know you should go out and hold a sign that says, "I'll pray for you, just walk up and ask." I don't know. whenever you feel like the Lord is leading you to do that, like, what are some of the ways that actually help you push through the awkwardness of doing it and going through?
Prayer is one, like I've already mentioned. The other one, I mean, these are just off the top of my head. I haven't pre-prepared these. Another one that I would say is getting to know the person. And I'm not advocating for... So, like, I mean, obviously, if you're already acquainted with them, then this is a bit easier. But I guess what I'm saying is, being a normal conversation partner rather than just a weird spiritual Bible person who can't talk about anything but the Bible. So with Jehovah's Witnesses or Mormons that come to my door, I want to just have some parts of the conversation, at least initially, where I just chat to them about how they're going, where they're from, what they do for a living, you know, outside of being a missionary or door knocking or whatever, just sort of get to know the person. If you already know them, then, you know, ask them how they are, sort of ease into the conversation rather than just being, bizarre and turning them off, socially, I guess, even before you get to anything spiritual. And I think the other thing is, the only other thing that kind of comes to mind is just from, like, if we're talking about, like, having spiritual discussions with, you know, faith-related discussions with people who we don't believe are professing believers or true believers, then I think probably a boldness that comes from urgency for the like for missions is probably the thing. So, and that's something that I get convicted of when I talk to people. Like, there's a couple of people that I know who are just, I mean, you're one of them, but there's others who live a lot closer who I talk to as well. Who they're just, it's almost like every time I talk to them about anything to do with Christianity, it ends up being a discussion, or the discussion ends up somehow going towards the urgency of evangelism and the fact that, you know, we need to be talking to people about God, even though it might be uncomfortable. So I'm certainly not advocating for, you know, become friends with someone for 5 years and then invite them to church, and then 2 years after that, invite them to a barbecue and then maybe ask them what they think about this whole Christianity thing. Like, I'm not saying that that's, when I was saying before that we should just be normal people with them, I wasn't saying we should do that. But yeah, I think that there can be a boldness that comes from, I guess, yeah, just the urgency of the Great Commission, the fact that, Jesus has commanded us to make disciples. And he's also promised that he'll return again. And he's also made it very clear that none of us know when that will be. And so we only have certain bits of the information. We have a decent amount of information, obviously, in the Bible that gives us everything we need to know. But because we don't know the day or the time, there is a level of urgency to be ready and to also to be ready ourselves and to be ready to spread the message to those who don't know it yet.
That's good. I think along with that, I think that the urgency has always been a big motivator for me outside of the moment.
That
makes sense. And so, I mean, I think that's like the foundational, definitely, is like once we really understand that, then there's always going to be part of us that desires to, whether or not we're able to do it or not. And as we grow in understanding that urgency, the more likely I think we are. So I think that's definitely good. One other thing that's helped me a lot was, especially growing up and still now, I've always been a really awkward person just naturally. And just in conversation, I've been good at conversation, really shy, etc. And I've always really like hated that side of myself. And never learned to accept that sometimes if I'm in a conversation, it's going to get awkward and I'm not going to know what to say. And the other person's just going to kind of look at me and we're going to like, all right, change the subject.
I haven't noticed you being awkward, by the way.
No?
No.
I've had a lot of practice over the years, but, but there's been times, still up to recently where I like I'll remember an awkward situation and my body will just tense up. And I'll just like, I don't know, it's hard to describe and it's, I probably should have saw a counselor about it a long time ago, but like I'll just like tense up and just say the same phrase, like it's almost over, it's almost over, it's almost something like that, until that memory gets pushed out of my head, because I just hated that awkwardness of that situation. And it wasn't until just recently, like a year or year and a half ago, my wife said something really that I thought was deep, which was embrace the awkward, just about those conversations, just embrace the awkward. It's going to be awkward. That's okay.
Yeah.
And so I had that in my head, but then just recently at our training, just one of the friends, we were just in a conversation, about how sharing the gospel has been going here. And he said, awkward conversations change lives. And that just stuck with me. Like if you're going to, like, how beautiful are the feet of those who share the good news, but that's going to be an awkward conversation every time, at least to some level. And it hit me all of a sudden, during one of those moments where I was like super tense, that it's never commanded in the Bible not to be awkward, at least that I can think of. like awkwardness isn't a bad thing. I don't even know if awkwardness, like, awkwardness might be in heaven. Who knows? Like, that might not be something that disappears. I may still have awkward conversations in heaven because it's, I don't think it's a sin to be awkward. And it was suddenly, it suddenly became true to me all of a sudden that being awkward is okay. Like, there's no reason to run from it. And in fact, I've spent my whole life being awkward. And so I'm an expert. Like, why am I so afraid of these conversations? I've had hundreds of them in my life, so it's just one more.
Yeah. But also, so that, also okay. You're project. I mean, I don't know, but it may be that you're projecting awkward onto those conversations in terms of, like, I'm not saying that you're making it up, but but it could be that what you feel is awkward about yourself is not actually coming across that way to the other person, and probably there's plenty of, like, you know, when you were talking before about in America in high school, you felt embarrassed having a Game Boy at lunchtime or whatever, and now you're in Japan, and there's a whole bunch of people who do that every day to and from work on the train. So, you know, I think just because one group of people you feel awkward around or whatever, it might be that amongst other people you slot in perfectly normally and there's no awkward at all. Do you know what I mean? And so
yeah, that's a good point.
It could just be some, you know, God's created everyone uniquely and differently. And so, like you said, that's not, it's not a sin to be different to someone else or to have different giftings or to be able to, speak more confidently with different groups of people to other people. So, if you stuck me in a room of programmers and told me to go and witness to them all, and I didn't know any of them for a bar of soap, I'd probably be the awkward one because I wouldn't know necessarily where to begin or how to talk, how to speak their language or whatever. Do you know what I mean? So different people have different areas that they either are gifted in or have experience in, and that can still be useful in evangelism or sharing the gospel.
That's another solid pun, by the way. Don't know how to speak their language. Programmers. Yeah, I think that's really good too. Like, I think for me is in that situation, it really was an identity issue. Like being afraid of feeling awkward and uncomfortable is really just, it says like it's looking for the glory that comes from man instead of the glory that comes from God. And not willing just to be comfortable with who God has made me to be in whatever situation I'm going to be in.
Yep. Yeah, it's interesting. I think identity is a big, plays a big part in confidence, like you were just talking about. And so, like, maybe that's another equally important aspect that I should have mentioned before when I was talking about the boldness that comes from the urgency of the Great Commission. I guess there's also a boldness that comes from knowing that as sons and daughters of the living God, that we have authority. You know, Jesus has been given all authority in heaven and on earth, and then he's told us to go and to make disciples, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. So we've been given that that commission on his authority, not our own. And so therefore, as we go into our daily lives outside of, you know, the comforts of church or Christian community, and we seek to witness instead to the people who don't necessarily yet know who God is and how they can come to know him, just that we can do that knowing that he's gone before us and that we're doing it in his strength and also with his authority. So ultimately, it's not about our personality type or our eloquence or, you know, I guess one of the great things about the story of the Bible is God uses often the weak people to show his power and his strength. And he talks about the fact that, you know, his power is made perfect in our weakness, and those kinds of things. You know, Moses wasn't equipped to speak to large groups of people, but God chose him and used him anyway. So knowing that it's God who's given us the task, and God that goes with us as we do it, I think, yeah, can bring confidence and hopefully dispel some of the awkwardness we feel in ourselves or the inadequacies we feel in ourselves. So I guess it's a matter of resting in him and relying on him for
for the confidence and even for the actual words to say, and the way that we conduct our lives and the conversations that we have, so they bring the most glory to Him.
Good stuff. Agreed.
If you would like to contact us, you can connect with us in our Slack team. Just head to slack.techreformation.com and follow the prompts to sign up and log in.
You can also go to our website, techreformation.com, and see all of our past shows. You can be sorted by topic or date. Maybe you can listen to anything there.
And we are part of the Theology Mix Network, so you can find a link in the show notes to their website and their iTunes feed. Please also remember to rate and review us on iTunes. It's really helpful when people just go and spend a couple of minutes putting some stars and then putting some words as well, just to tell people what you think of the podcast. It just helps us to stay in the charts somewhere and hopefully to have more people stumble on the podcast. If you use Overcast, also don't forget to recommend us on Overcast with the star feature. This music that you're hearing is used by special permission of Matthew Parker. Check him out on SoundCloud and iTunes. This has been Tech Reformation. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. We go to the ends of the earth, then you know we go to the edge of the world. Ain't no place too dirty, no. Ain't no place too dangerous. Ah, now it's me again. Oh my goodness, so much talking. I hope you can just talk your whole way through theology from the headlines.
This is just a side note. Anyway, in the future, maybe I can be the bridge between the meters and the feet.
Oh, yeah. Oops, I forgot about that.
At the moment, I don't know how... I can do a rough guess in my head, but how far 20 meters is. But
Japan runs on meters, does it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes.
Yep.
Japan's awesome. Their time is closer. Their measurements are right.
Yep. Yep.
Well, their measurements are Celsius. 21st century.
Yeah. Cool. I'm trying not to like do conversions like, oh, it's 16 Celsius today. I'm trying not to say that's this in Fahrenheit.
Don't bother.
Just to be like, it's 16 Celsius.
Just think of, remember when you were at school, did you ever play the banker's game at school?
Uh-uh.
We used to play this game where you got wooden blocks, and one wooden block was worth $1, and then there was like a stack of wooden blocks all glued together that was 10, and then grids that were like 100. And it was teaching you multiples of 10 first as the base. It just makes systems like that just makes like our money makes sense like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's 100 cents in the dollar. Water boils at 100 degrees Celsius. There's 100 centimeters in a meter. Why would you go with some other weird system? I don't get it. This doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, but feet were measured by the king's foot size or something.
Which king?
I don't know, but we can't lose that system.
Every king has to have the same foot size or else you're not fit to be king.
Well, oh, that's why they do generational monarchies.
Yeah.
All right.